One 22-year-old woman, two oars, 3 months' worth of dehydrated food, and 2,500 miles of open water. Tomorrow, Katie Spotts leaves her home in the home state of Ohio for Senegal, where she plans to launch her 19-foot rowboat into the ocean for a solo journey across the Atlantic sometime around New Year's Day. If she makes it, she becomes the youngest person to row across an ocean alone. If you'd like to ask Katie Spotts about her upcoming journey, how she'll do it, and why, give us a call. We'd especially like to hear from those of you who have experience in oceanic adventure. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And Katie Spotts joins us now from member station WCPN in Cleveland. And nice of you to be with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So you leave tomorrow for Africa. Any last minute second thoughts?
Oh, no, not at all. I've been planning this for 2 years. I'm just excited to start rowing.
And I assume there's a raft of, excuse me, I didn't mean to say that, a whole bunch of last-minute details you have to take care of.
Well, the boat actually shipped out about 3 weeks ago, so most of my preparations are just getting the boat ready, so most of it is done.
And I assume there's a lot of physical preparation on your part. You have to practice for this.
Oh, definitely. When I don't have the boat, I'm able to train on a rowing machine, but I do work a lot strengthening the core and lower back, because with rowing, if you lose your form, you lose your strength. So those are some areas that are really important in training.
I assume rowing machine is really different from rowing in the open ocean.
Oh, definitely. I was able to do a lot of training rows on Lake Erie. And then earlier this year, I did some training on the Pacific Ocean with a woman who rowed not only across the Atlantic Ocean, but she rowed across the Indian Ocean as well.
And I assume it had some interesting things to tell you about what the experience is like.
I think she described it as, I don't know offhand, but it's like something about riding a bull more than rowing, just because of the constant waves and the constant movement. So it should make for an interesting trip.
Well, the Pacific, I think, must have been instructive. Nevertheless, Lake Erie, well, it's freshwater. It's not as buoyant as saltwater.
Yeah.
It's different. Why are you rowing from east to west?
Well, with ocean rowing, you have to go with the prevailing winds and currents. It'd be physically impossible to, say, row from Africa to South America. So I chose this route because it is of the Atlantic. It is considered the more friendly route compared to the North Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm leaving at this time of year because it's least likely to have any storms. But with that in mind, these boats have made it through hurricanes and 50-foot waves. The boat is self-righting, so it can withstand pretty much anything.
It's designed, as I understand, by an Englishman?
Mm-hmm. Phil Morrison. Most ocean rowers are actually from the UK. There's only been about 10 or 15 Americans to do this trip.
And this is a growing ultra-endurance sport.
That's right. More people have been on the moon, but it's definitely growing.
Why do you do it?
Well, I've been doing challenges for a few years now, and I'm really passionate about linking up with charities. This row is called Row for Water, and my goal is to help 1,000 people gain access to safe drinking water for life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a billion people don't even have access to this most basic human need. So I'm really passionate about being able to challenge myself and then raise awareness and funds for a good cause.
But you could run 100 miles to do that. You could gather the world's largest ball of string or do something else. Why have you decided to do this particular challenge?
Well, I found out about ocean rowing really randomly. I was on a bus in Australia just chatting with the person next to me, and they mentioned that their friend rowed across the Atlantic 2 times. She did it once with her 50-year-old mother. So ever since I learned about it, it's just been stuck in my head since. Yeah, it's just been a dream of mine. So,
and what do your parents think? I have to ask.
Oh, well, I mean, as with any parent, they would prefer me not to. I mean, safety is their main concern. But after seeing how much I've put into this row, I think they feel more comfortable with what I'm doing. And being able to keep in touch at sea is important for them, too.
And do you have a way of keeping in touch with them?
Yep. I have a satellite phone and a Toughbook, so a really heavy-duty laptop, and that will enable me to make phone calls, do tweets and text messages and emails and blogs as well. So, and aside from that, I'll have tracking, so anyone could go on the website. It's rowforwater.com and see where I am at any given moment on the journey.
If you didn't scribble that down quickly enough, we'll put a link to it on our website at npr.org, Talk of the Nation. And I guess we'll find a way to keep track of you during this voyage. One of the things you have to worry about, though, is the possibility of getting run into by another vessel, all of which are going to be much bigger than you.
Oh, definitely. I have an AIS, so this is a device that will enable me to see where other boats are on my GPS and them to see me as well. And as soon as I see another boat, I'll get on my VHF radio and make sure they know to avoid running into me.
Well, some of the time, though, you're going to be asleep.
Yeah, the AIS has an alarm, so when I'm asleep, it will let me know, and I'll wake up and get on the VHF.
I read a story about your plans for the voyage, and you have to strap yourself in to go to sleep?
Well, when it's rough, I can strap myself in, but just because it's bobbling around so much, it is more comfortable to strap myself in.
Hmm.
And then when I am rowing, I actually have a harness, because if I get detached from the boat, that would be extremely dangerous.
So. Detached from the boat, and others washed overboard.
Yes.
Yes, that would be. I assume you also have extra oars. There's not just two oars.
Yes, definitely. There's pretty much extras and spares of everything.
This is an interesting boat. I looked at a picture of it in the newspaper. The New York Times did an article about it today, and it looks almost like an old Spanish galleon with a raised bow and then a stern castle.
Oh, there's actually only three of these boats in the world, and this is the only one in the United States. So it's 19 feet long. There's a cabin for me to sleep, and then another cabin for most of my food, and then hatches all lining the cockpit for more food and provisions.
Very curious looking craft. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. We're talking with Katie Spotts about her plan to row across the Atlantic Ocean. And let's start with Kim. Kim with us in Portland.
Hi. I was just wondering what kind of food you were taking with you, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Kim.
Most of my food will be the dehydrated meal. So I have a little jet boil stove. I'll add boiling water to these packs, and that's about 500 or 600 calories. And then I'll be supplementing that with energy bars and energy gels, trail mix, very high energy type foods. And I'll also have a sprouting kit, so I'll have some fresh foods on board too.
And do you have are you going to take some fishing line and trail a hook off the boat?
I have it as an emergency, but I am trying to row about 10 to 12 hours a day, so I'm using most of my time to row
just as an emergency. By the way, you mentioned a laptop. How are you going to power the laptop and the other communications equipment?
Oh, there's two solar panels on each cabin, and that is about 150 watts, so that's how everything will be powered.
Let's go next to Judy. Judy, also calling from Portland.
Hi there. Hope your cold gets better, Neil.
Thank you.
Oddly enough, I'm taking a sailing trip myself on the QE2 on Sunday down to the Caribbean.
Oh,
and
cool.
As much as I envy the fact that you're going to do this in a rowboat. I think it's the difference between camping and staying in the Four Seasons.
I don't think there's going to be anyone to bring her a drink with a little umbrella.
No. And of course, 4 o'clock tea. You know those British. And but I mean, are you going to leave an email address where people that want to support you, in spite of the fact that we, you know, prefer the QE2 over a rowboat, that we could support your cause?
Oh, definitely. If you would like to do that, the website is rowforwater.com.
Will that be on the NPR?
We'll put
website?
It on the Talk of the Nation site.
Perfect.
Sure. Okay.
Well, cheerio.
Thank you.
And bon voyage.
So
okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Ian, another caller from Portland.
Hey, guys. Hey, I am curious what sort of music you'll be listening to inspire you to row for so many hours, so many days and weeks and months?
Well, my favorite is Imogen Heap. I do like a lot of electronic type music, and I have well over 100 audiobooks, a lot of Comedy Central and podcasts. But yeah, there's a lot of audio entertainment.
Thanks very much. But that. Because loneliness, I assume, is going to be a problem.
Well, before I started meditating, perhaps I would have felt like, worried about that aspect. But for example, I did a 10-day meditation retreat where I was meditating 12 hours a day. It was 10 days straight without any kind of human interaction or reading or writing. And that was more difficult than any other challenge I've completed. I've been doing endurance challenges for about 4 years now. And I think meditation is definitely a big tool for me to help cope with the isolation.
And meditating while rowing is not a problem?
Well, I guess I feel like rowing is like an active form of meditation where I become more aware and present and, yeah.
How long connected. Is all this likely to take? I read you expect or hope to make about 30 miles a day.
Yep, and it will take me about 3 months, so I probably won't see another human being for 3 months.
And that's if you hit the landfall you hope to hit.
Yep. With ocean rowing, you are very vulnerable to what the weather gives you. So I hope to land in Cayenne, French Guiana, but if I miss that, I'll be aiming to land in Georgetown, which is another 500 miles or 2 more weeks of rowing.
I was going to say at 30 miles a day, just start doing the addition, and I'm sure you've worked that all out in your head. We're talking with Katie Spotts, who leaves tomorrow for Senegal, and on around New Year's Day, she's going to put her rowboat in the water and row alone across the Atlantic Ocean. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go next to Ken. Ken with us from Manhattan, Kansas.
Yes, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Well, good. Question I've got is that have you any information about the tracking of migratory whales or large pods of whales that would be possibly intersecting your transit?
You know, I haven't really followed it closely, but this boat is actually used. Another person went across this January through March. He did see a few whales, one shark, and lots of fish and birds, but other than that, I'm not sure of what I'll see.
Oh, well, okay. Well, just watch out for the very large whales. Sometimes they're very curious as to what you might be doing.
Have you encountered them yourself, Ken?
No, I was in the Coast Guard, and we unfortunately hit one, and we think we killed it because the water behind the wash prop was pretty red.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Be safe. Good
All right.
Luck.
I hope, well, certainly that wouldn't be a problem if you hit it with a rowboat. It might be the other way around. Let's talk with Tim. Tim with us from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
I was just wondering if there was going to be any kind of support boat going alongside.
No, actually, ocean rowing is a self-supported sport, so everything I need will actually be on the boat, all the food, all the supplies. But if I do need help, I do have an EPIRB, which is an emergency position indicating radio beacon, which is links via satellite, and that would be my way to call for help if I needed it.
Thanks very much for the call, Tim. And there have been instances of major rescue efforts mounted to find people who've been on adventures like yours, and I wonder if you considered the idea that in that possibility, and certainly you're not planning to be there, but in that possibility, diverting a lot of resources.
I'm not really sure what to say. I mean, I feel like that. I just feel called to do this, so I just really feel inclined to follow that calling and do as much as I can to help people get safe drinking water.
Let's see if we get another caller in. This is Linda. Linda with us from Philly.
Hi.
Hi, Linda.
How are you?
Well, I'll get over this cold eventually. I swear I will.
I'm really impressed with Katie, and I just wanted to know what kind of provisions you've made for any kind of illness or dehydration while you're at sea.
Well, I have a very extensive medical kit from everything from dental and vision. I pretty much have my own little pharmacy, lots of seasickness meds. What I can expect out there is to get blisters, perhaps sunburn, and a bit of chafing. But, so those are the most common injuries at sea.
There's going to be no one to give her a cold, so she's going to be okay there.
True, that part of it she has covered. Well, good luck, and I'm going to look you up online.
All right, Linda.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Let's go next to Joe. Joe with us from Chilmark in Massachusetts.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
I just want to, say the great job. It sounds like a great thing you're doing. I was curious. There's sort of a long history of people rowing across the Atlantic. under much different circumstances. One guy in particular was Harold Blackburn, and I wonder if your guests have ever heard of him. He was a Gloucester schoonerman that got lost off the ship. He was on his in his dory in the Grand Banks and got blown away from the ship, and the fog came in, and he ended up one point rowing to Newfoundland, but then they used to have races across the Atlantic. Are you familiar with him at all?
I am familiar with Woodvale, and they do host races across the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. The first 12 ocean rows were the historic ocean rows, so perhaps he was one of those where they didn't have, they had an open shell boat. They didn't have desalinators or any kind of GPS, but I'm not sure if that's...
This is long before that, where they actually did it in a dory. It was like in the early 1900s.
So, and not on purpose, just had to do it.
And what strikes me is that I'm glad that you're doing it in this day and age, how well prepared you are, but in these cases, these guys might have had a tub of salt cod and some hardtack if they were lucky.
If they were lucky, and water would have been a real problem.
Yeah, and also the other thing, I've been across the Atlantic, and you should have a great time. If everything goes nicely, it's such a beautiful place to be, you know, and it's the occasional time when you have to rush through the storms, it's a drag, but the rest of the time, it's very placid.
Joe, thanks very much for the call.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And Katie, we wish you the best luck.
Thank you.
And we'll try to keep up with you if we can.
That'd be great.
All right. We hope to talk to you while you're on the way. Katie Spotts leaves tomorrow for Senegal, where she will soon begin her solo attempt to row across the Atlantic. And she joined us today from member station WCPN in Cleveland. And we wish her, again, the best of luck.